is Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5, the game, the show of positivity, as we are live at Bridgestone Arena before today's game, the Preds and the Canadians. I could never do a show that is just dedicated to positivity.
I know.
But that's because nobody wants to hear that.
You're probably right.
I mean, when I...
That's why people used to buy newspapers.
When I'm not knocking the newspaper business, even though.
Go ahead, read it. That's why I always people, you know, who was it, Truman or somebody came out and said, that's why they read the sports page first, because it was the only part of the paper that was positive.
Well, what do they read now if people don't read newspapers anymore?
Oh, I have no idea. That's your deal.
You don't read the newspaper.
No.
So you got to read something? Anywho, I digress. If you take a look at the standings right now, the Predators are comfortably in at second, but they are 4 points behind the Jets, and the Jets have played two less games, which means that theoretically could be eight. So you're really 8 points out of first place. 8 points isn't impossible to overcome, but I'd say as you get towards the end of February, you're 8 points out with a month and a half to play. I don't feel good about you making up 8 points.
Who's behind us?
Dallas has played 63? Three less games. Correct. They're 8 points behind you, but they've played three less games. Give them six. Dallas is 2 points behind you.
That starts to get scary.
Okay. Dallas is 2 points behind you. St. Louis has played four less games than you. They have 61 points. Give them eight. They're two behind you. So, now that, hey, before we get into this feeling comfortable or how you feel or something like that, you know, maybe you got to look at the standings and the games in hand and all of that and think, I'm not so sure about all that. And I guarantee you that this coach does that. But looking back to their schedule, since the Winnipeg game, where Winnipeg walked in here and thrashed them 5-1, they played Florida, got thrashed 4-2. Then they beat Colorado, but Colorado has fallen so far off the map, I don't even count that as a good win anymore. They have fallen so far. They're like Notre Dame football. You know, Notre Dame usually starts the year at like sixth, and then they're, you know, 7-5. So I don't even count the Colorado win anymore. A nice win at Vegas where they won 2-1 right before the break. Not going to take anything away from Saros' performance in that. Then a good win with Saros at Florida, 4-1. Then Dallas came in here and beat you. You beat Arizona. You beat Dallas in overtime, but not a great performance in that Thursday night game against Dallas. Lost to the Blues, bad game. Lost to the Blues in overtime, not a good game. Lost to Detroit the other night. That's a lot of loss and getting thrashed in the last month or so, where we look back at it and see, you know, really one or two good wins in there where we walked out of it and felt good about that game. I think the one at Florida was a good win, and the one against Vegas, Saros played great. Other than that, you know, it's not so sure. And today, Peter Laviolette was asked the question about, you know, hey, don't get too high, don't get too low. This team does that kind of thing. And I was surprised that he didn't sugarcoat the situation at all, but he was as dead honest, I think, as it could be when he was asked about not getting too high or too low.
Something this team has always done a good job of is never too high after a win, never too low after a loss, especially in a situation like this. How important is that mental side of things?
It's important. I think our group's been through a lot the past few years. You know, we've seen the highs, we've seen the lows. And I think we've learned how to deal with that on a day-to-day basis. You know, that being said, we are staring at three losses here. And so there's got to be some urgency in the way we play the game coming into a game like tonight. It's always good to know where you've been lately, and that's in the loss. For me, that's been in the loss column and on the wrong side of things. And that a lot of times can be used to motivate players, certainly this group here. I think that there's just through the past history when things haven't gone their way, that's when things usually turn around. The leadership group steps up, and they're usually the guys that grab the rope first and others grab behind. So you know, there's a lot of confidence that in going into a game like tonight, we can play a real strong, solid hockey game and walk away with the 2 points.
So in that, it sounds like he's optimistic that this team can turn it around, but he did not sugarcoat that, hey, we've lost three straight games, and we're in the loss column right now, and we got to have a sense of urgency, probably for what I just said about St. Louis and Dallas at the same time. So what do we make about Peter not sugarcoating this team and where they are right now?
Well, I mean, I don't know how you could sugarcoat it.
Oh, you could easily sugarcoat it.
How?
You could say, hey, look, you know, it's a long season, and we're, you know, right now we're in second place, and we're hopeful that we can get it going by the playoffs. You know, we had some guys that were out. They're still coming back, not 100% yet. You had some trades. It's going to take a little bit of time to get the trades to kind of mix in there. I mean, there's just a lot going on, and we feel, you know, really confident that in years past we've shown we can turn it up a notch. And so we're hopeful we can do that tonight against a really good Montreal team, and that's what we'll go out there and hope to do.
And would you buy that? No, is the answer.
There's a lot of people I know that would buy that. Now, you're right. I wouldn't. Yeah, but there are a lot of people out there that would buy that.
I think Peter's an honest guy. You know, I mean, he's telling you what he thinks. And I don't, you know what? I mean, I don't think there's anybody in this town that thinks any differently. I think everybody would listen to him talk and sit there and nod their head. Yeah, yeah, you're right. You're right, Coach. Yep, I understand that. I see it, and you're right.
I'll tell you what I was thinking about when I was driving in today is I'm not sure there's anybody in this town who thinks this team's going to go back to the Cup Final this year.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I mean, you know, this time last year, everybody was like, going back to the Cup Final and going to win it this year.
Oh, wow, we were the best team in the league.
Even you know, 2 years ago, there was like a lot of optimism that, you know, hey, this team's got the pieces. They just haven't really come together yet, and they got the I think we were all kind of stunned with what they did in the playoffs, not going to lie.
Yeah.
But, you know, right now, I just – maybe it's the expectation level more than anything, but it feels like the fans are disappointed with where this team is right now.
Well, I mean, and I go back to the beginning of the year. And we were as bad as them. I mean, you know what? We were saying things like, you know what? Anything less than the Stanley Cup is going to be disappointing now. I mean, we expect this team to be in the Stanley Cup. We kept them together. We, you know, on and on and on. And all of that could still happen. Every bit of that kind of positivity could absolutely happen. You know, I think we realize now when you get back in the middle of it that, you know, nothing is as easy as it seems. And that last year, being able to win the President's Trophy is maybe, you know, there's more to it than just getting home field ice. I mean, you've got to really play and work at it and be focused. And I think they were. I mean, I think last year, this team was much more focused on winning than they are this year. Much more. Not just outsider looking in. I mean, it was important to win those games. It was important to get home field ice. And that was maybe more important than anything else.
Well, it felt like it was a tangible goal that everybody could come together and fight for. And this year, it doesn't feel – to me, like where we sit today in February, it doesn't feel like there's a big tangible goal. It's like Chris Mason came on the show yesterday, and I don't disagree with Chris, but Chris came on the show yesterday and said, I mean, who really remembers February hockey games anyways? I'm like, oh, my God, if you went to the coach and said that, could you imagine saying that to the coach? Could you imagine going up to Bill Belichick and saying, who cares about an October game against Miami? Like, who cares? They won't be thinking about the October game against Miami when we're at the Super Bowl. What do you think Bill Belichick would say to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think.
Like, I get it's not college football where losing one time affects everything, but it these February games matter to me. Because they matter in the grand scheme of the entire thing. I mean, I don't want to have to go on the road to Dallas to start the playoffs.
Right. And I think everybody understands that. I don't think – I don't – now, this is just me again. I don't think these guys are looking at it right now like these games are going to affect that in the end. Even though you and I both know that could be the case. But, I mean, I think they're looking at it and they're saying, yeah, geez, we should have won that. But, you know, and I think Mace said it yesterday. When it starts getting into March, you know, getting in now, things change. And maybe we'll see a difference, you know, then. Maybe we'll see an adjustment then.
God, I would hate that if I was the coach, though. Like, if the team was just like, yeah, who cares about these February games? I would hate that if I was the coach. I hate that now. I'm a radio host, and I hate that.
Yeah, imagine if you're somebody in the organization paying salaries. Say, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to pay you this much in February, and then we'll pay you this much in April. So you guys do what you want in February, we'll pay you accordingly. When it gets to April, May, then, you know, money goes up.
Well, that's the theory sometimes about some of these Russian players, is that they don't look at the Stanley Cup as like the end-all be-all. They look at the Olympics like the end-all be-all. They don't look at the cup that way. Now, it's hard for me after seeing Ovechkin celebrate with the cup all summer last year the way he did, you know, to say that this applies to everybody, because it clearly doesn't. But that, like, the Russian players care about the Olympics and they don't care about the cup, so they don't play as hard in the playoffs as they do in the regular season because they don't really get paid for the playoffs.
Well, they had – when I was coaching special teams, we brought in a kicker from England who was a professional soccer star in England. And we were talking with him, and we, you know, the other kickers, how much money do you make playing soccer? And at that point in time, he's, you know, I'm just throwing out a figure. He said, oh, I make like $150,000. Wow, how is it you get paid so much? Because these guys were probably making 20, mm-hmm. you know, as kickers. He goes, yeah, it's $150,000 a year, but you only get paid if you win.
Oh, they didn't like that.
Nope. If you lose, you get zero. If you win, you get, you know, a portion. All of a sudden, those guys went, oh, okay. We understand a little bit more.
So here's the question for the caller, 615-737-1025. Peter LaViolette says this team needs to play with a sense of urgency, and I agree. But are you with Floyd, and do you agree that maybe the February games, that this team just doesn't see the light at the end of the tunnel in the February games like they did last year when they were fighting for home ice? 615-737-1025 is the number. 615-737-1025. You look like you have something you want to say.
Nope.
Okay. 615-737-1025. I do have something I'd like to say, and that's how much I love high-performance scrubs from Authentically American. That's right, Authentically American. Everything with them is made in the USA, and that includes their high-performance scrubs. We're talking stain-resistant, wrinkle-resistant, antimicrobial, so they get off all the germs, and of course, comfortable as all get out. I'm so excited for my scrubs to come in. I literally think I can work out in them. They look like workout clothes. They are so comfortable, but they are perfect if you're a doctor, if you're a nurse, if you own a hospital, if you own a clinic. They're perfect for you. I'm telling you. Everything, again, made in the USA, and they've got over 20 different colors so that you can mix and match and you can decide what you want to go with for your scrubs. And again, if you're a doctor and maybe you need 10 pairs of scrubs because you go into the hospital 5 days a week, order them up from Authentically American. AuthenticallyAmerican.us/scrubs. And if you're a hospital and you give scrubs to your employees, you can order up 5,000 from Authentically American. AuthenticallyAmerican.us/scrubs. Clinics, nurses, doctors, hospitals, it's perfect for you. Again, that's AuthenticallyAmerican.us/scrubs. I love these scrubs. They are so comfortable. I'm telling you, if you're a doctor, we all know scrubs kind of stink. You know, get these. Antimicrobial. Get those germs off you. That's right. AuthenticallyAmerican.us/scrubs. Give them a try today. Jared and the GM from Bridgestone Arena. It's ESPN 102.5 again.
How important is the experience of this group the last couple of years to kind of, you know, even going all the way back to the 2015 team,
yeah,
in terms of kind of getting everything dialed in as you go down the stretch?
I think it's important. There's been a million ways of teams going down the stretch and how they've done. Not always directly relates or correlates to how it goes in the playoffs. I do think that, you know, given the choice, we would rather have some of the things on our team firing a bit better, and that always gives confidence. And I think when the confidence comes and you start to feel good about your game, the wins usually follow, and then that helps build the confidence. And as the playoffs push, to me, that can be a real positive.
That was Peter LaViolette earlier today. Again, the Preds just need to go on a nice little run. You know, like win six in a row.
That'd be nice.
That might be a little bit more than a nice little run, but just like win five out of seven, you know, do something like that. Do you have a thought or to the phones?
To the phones.
Phones. Brenda, 615-737-1025. Brenda is up next on the Preds. Go ahead, Brenda.
Hey, thank you. Happy Valentine's Day to both of you guys.
You too, Brenda.
Thank you.
Yes, I do agree with you. They need to come out with a sense of urgency, the intensity. They need to come out with their hair on fire. And he should have, like I said 2 days ago, he needed to set him down and ask him, do you really want to play here in Nashville? You need to really play here in Nashville. But I feel really good about tonight's game. I think we're going to win tonight. I don't see any problems. And happy birthday to Forsberg.
Yeah, and David Royal, by the way. Thank you for your call, Brenda.
Thank you, Brenda.
Could I not, so to her point about, you know, the sit the players down and sit them down and say, hey, if you want to be here, you got to, I'm not sure you can really do that with an entire team.
I don't, well, I mean, you probably could. But again, I mean, not
trade
too
the whole
long
team?
Ago, he said, what, he said the leadership group. See, he goes, that's. I don't understand. I don't clearly understand the hierarchy in the locker room between the players and the coaches, and I'm not passing it by. I just don't understand it. But they, I mean,
it sounds a lot like how you described New England. That if Bill had a problem, that Tom or Vince Wilfork went and took care of it.
Well, no, I mean, if there's a problem, Bill's going to take care of it.
And I think
but
that's
I
the
think,
same way here.
I think the players were good at not letting a problem get started. You know, as soon as the first guy says, you know what, I didn't get enough passes thrown my way, it's whoa now. We don't talk about that in this locker room. You know, that's it. So it never gets out there. But I mean, Peter said, you know, the leadership group are usually the ones that take them and lead them and they follow. And so I don't know, that's a unique, from my standpoint, is a unique, unique approach. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just unique for me.
I don't want to say, I think Peter overstates the leadership group. But first of all, half of the team is on the leadership group. So it's not like, you know, isn't it like Yossi, Ellis, Johansson, Ekholm, Forsberg, Subban, Bonino, Rene, and somebody else? Like, it's like 10 people. You know, so like,
So
Cal Yarncroke doesn't get invited to the barbecue, I guess, when they have, you know, the leadership group barbecue. But I think it's a lot like how it was for you in New England, where like if there's something, you know, something minor or something that, you know, that they didn't like, that maybe one of the veteran guys will from the leadership group will address it. Whereas if it's a real issue, Laviolette's going to address it. You know, Kevin Fiala not getting his rear end off the bench the other night for 10 seconds, that's a Laviolette thing. That's not a, you know, Roman Yossi goes up to him and talks to him, hey, man, you know, you need to get on the ice faster so we're not playing with four guys for 10 seconds. That's a Laviolette has to address that. But I think that more so Laviolette addresses the whole team. You know, that's where, you know, and he even said today, he was asked a question today about a guy like Ryan Hartman, you know, who's struggling offensively. What do you do? And Peter was kind of like, I mean, you know, we work with him. We sit down. We have one-on-one meetings. We have group meetings. We watch video. We talk about it. We get on the ice. We practice it. I mean, basically, and I'm paraphrasing what he said, basically like, hey, we're trying everything over here, people. And that's why, like, to Brenda's point about sitting them down and saying, hey, if you want to play in Nashville, this is what it's going to take. I mean, like, that sounds good, but that's not really what you do in pro sports, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying.
I mean, if the whole Titans team was playing bad, you wouldn't sit down with Eddie George and then Steve McNair and then say, hey, Eddie, if you want to be here, I know you just signed a $60 million contract, but if you want to be here, Eddie, you have to run for 150 yards next week.
Well, I think most places, most of the time, those kinds of things are understood. You know, that's kind of part of the job description. You know, you've got to go out and you've got to perform at a certain level, and if you don't, and it doesn't matter what you're doing, I mean, GM, coach, equipment guy, it doesn't matter. If you don't perform at that level, you're out of business.
Let's go back to your phones. Clay is up next on Jared and the GM. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Clay.
Hey, man, I went to the game the other night, And, man, they just – other than that first line, man, they didn't look right. You know, and I got to tell you, man, I like that second line that we got with Craig Smith and Kyle Turris. But, man, I'm not sure about Kyle Turris. I mean, I want him to play good, but, you know, what y'all touched on about Kevin Fiala, man, I want him to do good too, but, you know, we got to get somebody else scoring other than Victor Arvidsson. I mean, you know, I'll let y'all kick that around.
Yep,
so,
thanks.
Right.
So I think we totally agree with you on that front. I mean, the way the first line is carrying the team is not going to be sustainable long term for this team. In fact, it's not really sustainable right now because they're losing. So
the hard part for me is all of this talk about, you know, we're saving it or we're putting it off or we turn it on when we need to or we, you know, all of those kinds of things. In my mind, I'm going, yeah, that's okay for you guys, but guess what? That first line's not getting the message. I mean, they're out there playing as hard as they can play every night. Mm-hmm. I mean, their message is, I'm out here to win tonight, last night, the night before, and tomorrow night. So, whoever that message is getting to, it's getting to everybody but the first line. Not everybody,
and the goalies.
But the first line. Yeah, there are other guys too. But I mean, I think that's the part of the argument that I don't understand. If that's all part of, that's kind of the way it works, well, why would your best players not be doing that?
No, I hear you. No, I totally agree 100% with that. And I think to the second line, like I'm a man of my word, Floyd. In fact, I'm so much of a man of my word that I think that, you know, I'm either going to owe you $100 today or I'm going to owe you $100 whenever the courts figure this out, which is probably going to be about 10 years. But at some point, I'm probably going to have to owe you $100 soon. But more importantly, to back up my point of being a man of my word, I'm not going to get on Kyle Turris right now because he's still coming back from the injury. But I set Saturday, you know, that's the last game, and then after that, I'm going to start criticizing. But, man, that second line was garbage in the playoffs, and it has picked up into this year of being awful. And I don't know when the moment comes where you're like, man, something's just wrong with that group. And I'm sure that Turris won't be on the second line today. I'm sure he'll keep him down and keep Bonino up, but ugh.
But that wasn't last year in the regular season.
They were killing it.
Yeah.
We loved them.
They were the best line we had.
Remember we discussed whether or not I owed an apology to Craig Smith because I was so on his butt the year before that then Craig Smith goes out there and had 20-something goals last year, and it was like, should Jared apologize to Craig Smith? And now I'm glad I didn't apologize to Craig Smith because I look at Craig Smith. I'm like, what are you doing?
I mean, they were just killing it. They were the one line you could count on. And we were talking about, you know, the first line from time to time, and certainly the other. But, I mean, you were kind of like, wait a minute now. You know, when are you guys going to catch fire? Then got to the playoffs, and they caught fire.
Ball basketball last night. Big, big, big win over South Carolina. Big because it sets up the matchup against Kentucky, and the Vols will still be number one. But not as big because Kentucky lost to LSU, which I hate. On a rule that, you know, we went over yesterday. I don't know how you did it. But did the Vols prove something last night that should make us feel good about Kentucky and feel good about Duke if they were to play them? I want to get to that coming up next. Jared and the GM, we are live from Bridgestone Arena. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Crowd on its feet. Here, Thompson Bowling. One more rebound for Silva. That's going to do it. Carolina competes, but comes up short on the road at Tennessee. The final score, 85-73.
There's a lot of basketball left to play. There's a lot, and I'm like right now, I mean, I know we got Kentucky next, but I also know that we have to start out with what did we not do well tonight, and what do we have to do to try to fix that before we can even talk about Kentucky.
That was Rick Barnes last night. You know what I said at the end of that game last night, Floyd?
What's that?
Hallelujah. I said, hallelujah, thank goodness that I'm done watching these boring SEC games where Tennessee goes out and just, you know, hey, it's close maybe for a minute, and then they blow the other team out. You know, the only fun we've had with the Vols in the last month, other than them just kicking butt, is the Vandy game that was overtime down to the wire. That was a really fun game to watch. But the rest had been exactly like last night. Win by 18. You know, hey, South Carolina made some plays. You never really sweat it out. I mean, just like that West Virginia game on a Saturday where Dickie B is, like, enough. And now we're done with those games, at least for one day. Because Saturday, we get the game. Kentucky and Tennessee, that's on 94.9 Game 2. By the way, a great doubleheader. Kentucky and Tennessee, 94.9 Game 2. Preds, Vegas, 102.5. But I digress. The one thing, though, last night, the Vols, once again, did not take the night off. Kentucky, you can argue, took the night off. I think you can argue it because you could argue LSU's a pretty good team and that was a good game between Kentucky and LSU the other night, in which a bad call decided it in favor of LSU.
Right.
But I still felt like there was a little bit of Kentucky taking the night off. Duke definitely took the night off the other night for the first 30 minutes, and then they played their butts off for the last 10. Do the fact that the Vols don't take nights off, they have one loss to Kansas early in the season when Azubuike was healthy, when Kansas wasn't awful, like they have one loss in overtime, and other than that, they have played consistent basketball the rest of the season. Does that give us hope that, you know, hey, Kentucky may have taken the night off the other night. You know, they may be kind of Duke, you know, takes the night off the other night for most of the game. They could be one of those teams that if they take a half off against the Vols could beat them. Does the fact that Tennessee doesn't take nights off, is that their kind of one advantage on these two teams in Kentucky and Duke, especially Duke, who has more talent than they do?
Well, I think it shows the maturity of the team, you know, the seniority, if you will, of the team. I mean, those guys have been together for a couple of years now, and they know each other, and they, you know, I think that's part of it. And I also think, you know, they've got probably six or seven guys that are just interchangeable. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter who runs out there. So if one guy is sloughing off, or if one guy is taking a break, then he's probably not going to be out there for very long. You know, they'll just replace him.
Well, and it's like that same way from production. Grant Williams had 8 points last night.
I think the advantage they have from the sheer numbers and from the seniority and maturity of the group is going to help a ton. Because let's face it, all of these teams, the one and dones, and all of these young kids, and you know, if they're fired up, if they're cranked up, you know, they're probably going to kick your teeth in. But they're young and immature, and maybe they just don't get cranked up all the time. And if they don't, then you are going to have a chance to go in there and steal a couple.
Well, I don't think, you know, like, I think Duke and Kentucky are two totally different beasts when we're talking about them. You know, I think Kentucky is going to come out on Saturday night, and they are going to play the hardest they've played all year.
Yeah, they'll be on fire.
And there are some things about Kentucky that I really would worry about if I'm the Vols. I think Tyler Hero is a really, really good player, and P.J. Washington is starting to become an absolute beast. But that's not Duke. Duke, Zion, Reddish, R.J. Barrett, you know, Trey Jones. Like, Duke is, to me, if Duke plays great, Tennessee can't win. If Kentucky plays great on Saturday, I still think Tennessee can win that game. Like, I think that this is going to be a great game Saturday night between these two teams, because I think that both teams are going to be super motivated. The Vols are always motivated. But, like, even in the games, we're going to have great matchups, like Grant Williams versus P.J. Washington. Now, P.J. Washington has been great for Kentucky lately. So I'm excited about that. But, I mean, I feel like Tennessee can beat anybody in the country straight up except for Duke. Because if Duke plays Tennessee, it'll be in a national championship game or it'll be in a national semi. I would assume, unless something crazy happens, that Duke will probably be the number one seed in the NCAA tournament and Tennessee will probably be the number two seed in the tournament. And so if that's the case, then you would not play each other until the national championship game. If they get Duke in a national championship game, Duke will be so cranked up for that game. Like, you're not going to have Zion and those guys sleepwalk through the first half of the national championship
game.
Yeah,
I wouldn't think.
So you would need somebody to knock Duke off along the way, like in an Elite Eight or something like that, where Duke plays the way they played the other night, and it, like how Louisville was, and Louisville's the exact perfect team. Because now they wouldn't play Louisville in the NCAA tournament because they're in the same conference, or they wouldn't until later. But Louisville was 16th in the country, but clearly not on Duke's level. So they're a good team, but they're not on Duke's level. But they got guys that can make shots. They've got a decent coach. They don't have anybody that can handle the ball, and that, you know, became an issue at the end of the game. But that's the kind of team that runs out to a 25-point lead and then all of a sudden holds on and beats Duke in the Elite Eight. And now Duke doesn't go to the Final Four. And instead of that, Tennessee gets to play, you know, somebody who stinks or somebody who's not as good as them, certainly not as good as Duke, in the national championship. That is the way the Vols win the title. I just don't think Tennessee can beat Duke if they get them in a national championship game. I definitely think Tennessee can beat Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kentucky-Tennessee game is going to be 50-50. You know, it's going to be – they're going to go out there and they're going to play, and it's going to end up being a overtime game or end up being a two-point game or a one-point game. I mean, I think it'll be exciting.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be one of those things where, like –
I think it'll be tremendous.
It's going to be one of those things where, you know, for example, it goes down to the wire and it's a tie game. Tennessee misses a shot. And with 9 seconds left, Jordan Bone gets the rebound, and they kick it out, and they hit a three, and they win the game. You know, it's going to probably be one of those. I look at Kentucky and Tennessee, though, as a three-game series. You know, they're going to have this game in Lexington, where I think I'm probably going to side with Kentucky, especially after Kentucky lost to LSU. Then they play in Thompson Bowling, and I think in Thompson Bowling, for a young team like Kentucky, I mean, that's 22,000 Tennessee fans raining in on you for the biggest game that they've played in God knows how long.
It'll be a lot of orange.
So I'm going to go with Tennessee probably when they play at Thompson Bowling. And then the question is, when they play in Nashville, which I think we're going to get a Tennessee-Kentucky game here at Bridgestone Arena, then what happens? Now, I am praying and rooting like crazy that LSU loses a couple of games here, because I want Tennessee-Kentucky to be in the finals. I don't want that to be in the semifinals. I want that to be in the SEC finals. But I look at that like a three-game set against two evenly matched teams. They're built differently, and they have different strengths and weaknesses, but Tennessee and Kentucky are kind of on par. I don't look at Duke and Tennessee as on the same level.
I haven't seen enough of Duke to play to really make a decision one way or the other.
I got 10 minutes on the DVR from Tuesday night for you to watch, and that'll tell you what you need.
I think Tennessee is going to – we all know how they're going to win. You know, they're going to go out there, and they're going to win by just being solid and being a team and not making mistakes and getting a shot here and there and, you know, doing all of the things that an experienced veteran team would do. You know, the part that scares you about a team like Duke is they've got these phenomenal athletes. And if they go off, I mean, you don't have a chance. And that's the scary part. That's why it's always a matter of, are they going to go off or no? You know, which way is it going to go?
It's not even going off. I mean, if they go off, if Duke goes off, you know, they could play with an NBA team probably. It's not so much that as much as it is Duke going to show up? And I don't think there's a chance that we could see Duke not show up in a national championship game.
Yeah, I don't think either.
So then you can't play Duke in the national championship game. You have to have somebody else beat Duke before you play them.
Well, yeah, but I mean, just because they're there in this national championship doesn't mean that you go off, you know, the guy goes out there and scores 50. I mean, what if he goes out and scores 8? It's a different game now.
Zion's not scoring 8 in a national championship.
I have no idea. I'm just saying we've seen those kind of things happen. You know, what if he goes out there and in the first 3 minutes has 3 fouls? You know, now all of a sudden it's whoa, whoa, whoa. So I don't, you know, there's 1,000 things could happen.
615-737-1025. Your thoughts on the Vols. Thank goodness, finally Saturday, we're going to get an entertaining showdown kind of game. And again, coverage starts, I believe, at 5 o'clock on 94.9 Game 2 Saturday for Vols in Kentucky. Jay Billis has come out with his tiers and you'll be stunned where he's got Tennessee and where he's got Kentucky. I shouldn't say you'll be stunned, but I was a little surprised. We'll get to that coming up next. Jared and the GM, we're live from Bridgestone Arena at ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Your leading scorer on the team, you know, goes for 8 points tonight, and you guys still put up 85. What does that say about your versatility, your weapons?
Well, I do think we're balanced, but I think a lot of it has to do with the pace of the game is really fast. You know, they really themselves got down the floor. They scored a lot of baskets early in transition. They shot the ball well, but there were a lot of possessions in the game, and, you know, you look at his points, but, you know, he was responsible for, you know, those. He had 7 assists, but again, when you put he in Silva in there with Coach Warren, those guys, it's a tough front line that you're dealing with. But again, I thought Grant, other than the last play, and he actually told me coming off the floor, he said I should have made a pass on that last shot. And I think that when he keeps that mindset, he'll be fine.
That was Rick Barnes again. Grant Williams last night in the 85-73 win for the Vols. Grant Williams only had 8 points, which I think kind of quells the question that you asked a couple weeks ago, which is, hey, what are they going to do if Grant Williams doesn't play well? Schofield, 21, Turner, 10, Bone, 10, Alexander, 10, Williams, 8, and then Jordan Bowden off the bench, 16. So I think that's your answer. Tennessee has to be the, I don't want to say the deepest team in the country, but they have to be able to kill you in all 5 spots and guys off the bench more than anybody else.
Well, I think they're the most consistent off of that. I mean, it's not like you're going from a number one draft choice to a free agent. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all second and third round draft choices, 5 or 6 or 7 deep, whatever it is. So they're all pretty good players. And if one, like I said before, I think if one's not playing hard or if one's not hot, guess what? Come over here and sit by me and let Billy go in there.
I don't think you ever have to worry about somebody not playing hard on the Vols. You know, they are always.
That's right. They do play hard.
You know, they are always giving it 100%. And I like the fact that, you know, Jordan Bowden could have, he could have cried about being put on the bench for Lamonte Turner and hadn't said a peep. Goes out there 16 points last night. You know, that's good team basketball.
Absolutely.
So, Jay Billis has put out his tiers of college basketball teams, 1 to 68. Vanderbilt did not make the cut. Which, by the way, Bryce Drew, he's going to get next year, so I'm not going to call for him to be fired. But
you've got certain guys that are.
Well, he needs to pay what he owes.
Certain guys are sacred cows.
He needs to pay what he owes. I watched like 5 minutes of that Vanderbilt basketball game yesterday. I couldn't watch anymore. They suck, and he sucks. And I can't believe that I believed Bryce Drew was going to be the cure-all for Vandy basketball because they stink. And I don't care if Darius Garland got hurt. I get it. Okay, so maybe instead of making the tournament, you don't make the tournament. But you don't start off 0-11 in conference play. They stink. Stink. Okay, back to Jay Billis. So he's got his Tier 1 national championship favorites. So he's got 5 teams he's got listed as his national championship favorites. Number 1, the Duke Blue Devils. Billis writes, if you haven't noticed before Tuesday, the comeback win against Louisville should seal it. This group is special. This is the best freshman class I have seen in my time in the game. From talent to maturity to athletic character to just plain competing, this group is on a different level. Duke might not win the whole thing as the best team doesn't always win. However, this is the best team. And I think Jay Billis kind of echoes my thoughts. That is, hey, if the Vols get there, like, you know, no shame in losing to Duke. I don't think the Vols would beat Duke if they played Duke. Billis, number 2. The Tennessee Volunteers. Billis writes, if you don't like one-and-done-led teams, then you should love Tennessee. So you should love Tennessee, Floyd.
Yeah.
This is an old-school team that has grown up together and is reaping the benefits of being a veteran group. The Vols are shooting better than 52% from the field in SEC play, and Grant Williams is living at the free throw line. Tennessee's game against Kentucky will decide the SEC. Tennessee's games against Kentucky will decide the SEC race. The Wildcats will continue to get better as the end nears. There is reason to believe Tennessee will continue to get better too. I would agree with that, with everything that Billis says. I think it's going to come down to those two teams. I would be scared to death about how much better Kentucky gets over the course of the year. But who's to say the Vols aren't going to get better as the season goes along?
Yeah.
Bilas's other three national title contenders. Number three, Virginia, which I don't think Virginia is a national title contender. Just after what I saw with them against Duke on Saturday and then Monday against Carolina, they won the game and they played, but like I blamed Carolina more for losing than I gave Virginia credit. Number four, Gonzaga. Again, forget about the Gonzaga. Number five, Kentucky. And Bilas writes, don't be too concerned about the loss to LSU. Kentucky is looking more like the team that was ranked number one before the season. Is this team as good as Duke? No, but this team can beat Duke or anyone else. First of all, let me say, I disagree with Jay Bilas. They cannot beat Duke. A major difference has been the stellar play of PJ Washington, who is averaging 21 points and almost 6 rebounds in his past 3 games. Washington is a legit pro. So I agree with everything except for the fact of, hey, Kentucky could beat Duke. But he's got Kentucky and Tennessee both in the mix for the national championship along with Duke. Do you think that that's fair, or do you think maybe we should slow our roll down a little bit on Kentucky being in that group?
Well, no. Now, again, I haven't canvassed the entire country. So, you know, from that standpoint, of the teams that I have seen, yeah, I would say that's fair. I would say to have those two in the top five's okay with me.
I mean, yeah, I think Kentucky's top five, but I just, to me, Duke and Kentucky are not the same. They are not even on the same level. They are, and I would throw Virginia and Gonzaga there too. To me, it's Tennessee and Duke and everybody else. And I'm not taking anything away from Virginia, and I'm not taking anything away from Kentucky or any of these other teams. I told you, I'm going to pick probably Kentucky to win on Saturday night because it's in Rupp Arena and how they lost the other night. But he's got his third tier, does Bilas, and his third tier has teams like Michigan State and Michigan and Carolina and LSU, and they've got those teams in there. And I think Kentucky is more like Carolina than Kentucky is like Duke. I mean, Duke smashes Virginia at home on Saturday. The most points Tony Bennett's teams have ever allowed at home. That's how good Duke is. And then Virginia goes to Carolina and beats Carolina in a good game because Virginia and Carolina, to me, are on the same level, and Duke is just not. And I still think, even though I would take Duke over the Vols, I still think you have to put the Vols in the same class with Duke.
Okay.
Well.
So what are we? What's the problem?
Well, my thing is that Kentucky doesn't deserve to be in that group.
Who would you put in there?
Again, Kentucky would be in a third, would be in that second group for me, because Tennessee and Duke would be at five. No. I'm talking about like the Jay Bilas has those five as championship contenders.
Right.
I would not have Kentucky as a championship contender. They can stay five.
Who would?
But to me,
oh.
Tennessee and Duke.
So you're arguing about the numbers?
Yeah. Right. Like what like list they fit in. I do not look at Kentucky as a national championship contender. I do look at Tennessee as a contender. And it's hard for me to say that you can't count Gonzaga because Gonzaga did beat Duke. But I again, to me, those last 10 minutes that we saw from Duke, I mean, that's a special team. And the question is, are you going to see the first 30 minutes from Duke that we saw Tuesday night where they got down by 23 points? Are we going to see that in an NCAA tournament game? Because let's say Duke gets matched up with LSU. Because LSU, I mean, I think I was surprised because I don't watch a lot of LSU. I was really surprised. LSU's a good team, you know, that played Kentucky the other night. I was surprised, at least for me, that I was surprised that LSU beat Kentucky. But that's the kind of team LSU could beat Duke if they were to play like in an Elite Eight and Duke were to not show up for the first 30 minutes.
Yeah.
That's the kind of team you need to shock Duke.
Which I think any of those down-the-line teams that gets hot, I mean, they would have a chance to shock any one of those teams. Mm-hmm. Simply because they're thinking about, you know, okay, we're going to have to beat Tennessee or we're going to have to beat Kentucky or we're going to have to beat Gonzaga to be the national champs. And all of a sudden, here comes Washington. And they jump up there and bite you in the butt, and, you know, now none of that matters. So, I mean, I think that's always, especially with the young players, you know, the guys that really are immature and haven't gotten there and likely won't get there for a while.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. We'll take your calls in on this again. We'll get to the college basketball calls. We'll work them in there as well. So don't think that we've forgotten about that. But Pekka has, I have to give Pekka credit. He believes in this team. Is he right for doing so? Or maybe are we hesitant to get into the same boat with him? We'll get to that coming up next. Jerry and the GM are live from Bridgestone Arena here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Guess who my Valentine is this year, Floyd?
Your mom?
No, my friends at Hiller, although I love my mom. Happy Valentine's Day, Mom. And it was just her birthday. Happy birthday, Mom. But my friends at Hiller, that's right. Hiller Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, Electrical, they're the best. And you know what I love about Hiller in the, you know, 6 months or year that I've been with Hiller? What I love about them for, you know, being in the Happy Hiller Club is their true transparency pricing. That's right. A lot of these people are going to come into your house and they can take advantage of you. They can say, hey, I know how much that I can get away with charging you on your AC. Don't let somebody do that to you. Call Hiller. They have true transparency pricing where, again, a Hiller technician who is trained, and I have been to the Hiller headquarters, and I have seen how they train these people. And these people, these technicians will come out to your house. They are trained. They are experienced. They will come out to your house, and they will give you a quote based on true transparency pricing where you know what you're paying for and why you're paying for it. And I absolutely love that. The other guys do not have true transparency pricing. Hiller does. And that's why they're my Valentine this year, because I am so glad to be a member of the Happy Hiller Club, and I am so glad to be telling you about Hiller. Again, that is Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Everything that goes wrong in your house, let Hiller come on out, take care of it. And, of course, true transparency pricing. Don't forget about it. Happy Valentine's Day, Jaren the GM. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.